This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can be a big part, and I am jazzed as hell to introduce to you right now Dr. Susan Webb-Yackey. She's the professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She had an opinion piece in the journal Sentinel several weeks ago. Town hall conversations showcase desire to find common ground across Wisconsin. We loved it, Susan. Welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Dom.
It is my pleasure. Well, we're all about common ground. We're all about conversations here. Sometimes it gets a little hairy. It can be a little less respectful. But, you know, I endeavor to have great conversations, Susan. Let's talk about this. You had some town halls. Then you had some dinner conversations. What started this and what was your conclusion?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, this is a long running challenge for our society, right? The fact that we're so polarized these days is evident in everywhere, right? We see it in our communities, we see it in the news, we see it in our homes sometimes. And the La Follette School of Public Affairs, its mission is evidence-based policymaking. But we quickly recognized we can't get to evidence these days unless we can talk to each other. So one of the reasons we set up this set of programming in advance of the 2024 election is we wanted to get Wisconsinites across the political aisle talking to each other.
Evidence-based. That's a nice thought. Who determines what the evidence is? Isn't that part of the problem? What one side would consider as evidence, the other one would call hearsay?
Oh, that's certainly part of it. And, you know, I'm a social scientist by training, a political scientist, and my colleagues at the La Follette School are economists and public policy scholars and public administration and sociology scholars. And all of us collect and think about evidence differently. In fact, every American collects and thinks about evidence differently. And that's okay. You know, as we bring that collection to the table, part of, you know, figuring out the quote unquote truth is to sift and winnow that evidence together and to do so as a community member.
The need for civility. I had a couple of rules. Listen, speak, respect, disagree agreeably, and be present. I love this, and it sounded like it went over very well, and the participants really enjoyed themselves, which, you know, I can see walking into something like this, especially given the political situation we're in now. You can be concerned how hairy is this going to be. But I think number one, Susan, you have to have willing participants, right? Not just a normal conversation, but even to do what you guys did.
Absolutely. You do have to have willing participants. You know, it's a challenge for, you know, thinking through what could be some of the remedies to our political polarization today. Is that the fact that the people that show up oftentimes aren't the ones that you really need
right,
to talk to.
Right.
And, you know, so one of the ways we tried to get around that with this set of events, and let me tell you a little bit more about these rich set of events, and you asked earlier kind of what we found. Let me tell you a little bit about that too. So we set up these events by first using a representative sample of Wisconsinites. We actually are part of a survey that went out to 3,000 Wisconsinites. It's a representative sample of Wisconsinites that have agreed to participate by sharing their attitudes and assessments in about a monthly survey. And it's designed so that, you know, gender and race and income, it represents Wisconsin, these 3,000 people, and geography as well.
Sure.
And so we participated in this survey by asking them a few questions about their views and attitudes. And at the very end, we asked a question of all these survey participants. If there was a conversation event, you know, that brought you together with people from across the political aisle in your community, would you ever come? And the people that said yes, oh, actually about half of the 3,000 people said,
wow,
yeah, I'd come, right? So actually that's sort of interesting in and of itself, right? And then the next question asked people specifically and said, there's a dinner and conversation event in your community. Here's the address. Here's the date. Would you ever want to come? And a huge percentage of the people that said yes to our first question said yes to the second. And that's the group of people that we brought together. So while it's not a representative sample and slice of Wisconsinites, it's the people that said yes to those questions and could come, right? It is closer to a representative selection than a lot of these kind of dinner and conversation events. And that helps us kind of think through what could be the mechanism or the means by which these events could be the most impactful. So we have a kind of a closer set to representative Wisconsinites. So we brought them together in four different events for our dinner and conversation events in Pewaukee, Green Bay, Eau Claire, and Madison. And they were all in advance of the 2024 election on four consecutive Wednesdays. And across those events, we had about 350 Wisconsinites come. Each table was set, we were kind of picture it to be kind of like circular tables at almost look like a wedding reception at a local Holiday Inn. Like that's, in fact, we did a lot of our events at local Holiday Inns. And each table had about 6 to 8 Wisconsinites. They didn't know each other. They were across every table had some kind of partisan difference. We knew that in advance. We actually seated people because we knew that some were strong Democrats and some were strong Republicans and some independents. And each table also had a trained facilitator. And the facilitator was a La Follette School student, staff member or faculty member who had been specifically trained to kind of guide this conversation and make sure that the participants lived up to those expectations, those rules of the road that you listed earlier. And to be frank, we didn't know what to expect. And, you know, neither did the participants.
Yeah.
We had this wonderful woman share at the very end of the 2-hour event where they were served kind of dinner and had conversation. At the very end, we had one woman say, we were kind of recasting and saying, like, what did you think of this event? What did you expect? And she said, hey, look at me. I didn't bring my coat. I didn't bring my purse. I thought this was going to be a bust. And I was going to say I had to go to the bathroom and leave. And she said, after 2 hours, I had a wonderful time. And I really felt heard and understood and heard some things that kind of challenged some of my beliefs in ways that are healthy. And so that is the kind of feedback that we got from a lot of, not all the participants, but almost all the participants were extremely satisfied with the event.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Dr. Susan Webb Yackey, professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Well, apparently we just need to have some students of the La Follette School of Public Affairs to go to everyone's Thanksgiving dinner and make sure everyone sticks to the rules of the road, Susan. Were there any surprises to you?
I think I was surprised at the desire for connection. This is connection across people that don't know each other. So I'm thinking about all of these were anonymous. This was anonymous participation, you know. But afterwards, many people shared their contact information with each other, yeah, and you know, made connection, wanted to continue the conversation. A lot of people in their feedback on the event said, like, next time I think you should make the event slightly longer. You know, I think actually think 30 or 45 more minutes would get us, you know, going.
Yeah.
We'd be able to do more. And that was the piece I didn't anticipate, was the fact that people really wanted to connect, and they don't want to just connect with people that are like them. They do want to hear with people that are different, at least in terms of their political views. And a lot of people found that part of the event, you know, terrifically stimulating.
Well, and, you know, we are Wisconsin Nice. You know, we're actually referred to as Wisconsin Nice. It's a thing. So when we're able to get back to that, it's really endearing. Susan, the facilitators, though, I think that probably had a big part of it, because a lot of the conversations that I have a tendency to get into, people get real excited and start throwing things back and forth. And then sometimes it's a challenge, it's a beat down, depends on how, you know, what you're trying to prove. But I think having a facilitator there probably helped overcome some of those things, because folks maybe aren't really used to having difficult conversations or having their own beliefs challenged.
I think that's probably right. Our facilitators were supposed to be decently hands-off. You know, they were keeping that conversation going, making sure that nobody you know, one or two people didn't dominate the table, which, you know, yeah. I'm a professor, that happens in the classroom. Right. I get it. We also had some introductory remarks that I provided at each of the events. And one of the things that I really emphasized that the events were not about changing people's minds or opinions. We did not intend or want to do that. Instead, we wanted people to feel free to share those thoughts and opinions and hear from others, and kind of hear and listen and be heard. And that is a big part of what's also missing in society today. People are so quick to share their opinion without listening to that of others.
Susan, was there alcohol served at the tables?
No, but we did hear from some of our participants that might have made the conversation flow a little better.
You never know.
It might have made it flow, but not necessarily better. Not necessarily.
How are the topics? How did you decide what the table is going to talk about?
Yeah, great question. So I mentioned that the vast majority of our participants were recruited through this ongoing survey of a representative group of Wisconsinites. Mm-hmm. And that survey asked the same group a set of public policy questions to tap what are their kind of topics that are most interesting to them. And we used those questions to guide some of our conversations. In particular, we focused on K-12 education. That was some of the setup questions. There's a number of questions about things like vouchers for private school education, or you know different controversial topics that are being taught in the classroom. So we had a few kind of standard questions to get people talking, and that again was based on the survey responses of these individuals previously. And then after that, the conversation went any direction the table wanted to go. Gotcha. So some tables stayed very closely hewed to that issue, and some went very far afield, as you may expect.
Susan, do you have time to stick around for one more short segment on the other side of this break? We'd love to continue this conversation.
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Excellent.
You.
Love it. Dr. Susan Webiaki, professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We got about a minute before we hit the break. What advice would you give talkers like me who engage and want to engage with folks and sometimes we don't think alike?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, we just held for our students a session before the Thanksgiving holiday to sort of recap together what did we learn from some of these events and how can you translate it to your conversations with your uncle and your aunt. And
Thanksgiving's around the corner. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the break to think about it. And I'm looking for some practical advice here, Susan, because I got to do this every day. And sometimes I get yelled at. Susan, please stick around. Once again, Susan Webiaki from the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Dr. Susan Webiaki, Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, sticking around for one more segment. Susan, thank you for doing so. Bringing people together, 350 different Wisconsinites across the state for dinner and meetings and conversations and not drinks. And everyone was very surprised. And I'm very eager, if you would provide for us, Susan, the best advice that you could possibly give, not just folks like me who talk in radio, but everyone who has an opportunity to engage in conversation. How do we keep this thing going? Or as Jess said, how do we make this real?
I mean, I think I'll provide two pieces of advice, and I'm going to call them sort of state of minds. When you come in to these questions, like these conversations, what kind of state of mind do you have? You know, so you could think of yourself as being like tensed up and like ready to fight. Like that would be a state of mind, right? And I'm going to suggest that doesn't work very well.
All right, I'm going to mark that one down. Damn it.
All right.
Okay. All right.
All right. Cross that one off. All right. What's next?
Absolutely. So let's get on the other end of the spectrum and kind of two different ideas. And one is curiosity. So curiosity happens to be this emotion that all of us have, and it's just a really wonderful emotion to bring to these kind of conversations. It's instead of say, and someone tells you their, you know, their long-held belief, their kind of why for how things ought to work, and maybe it's something you don't agree with. One state of mind is to say, is to be curious about it and to say, like, how did you come to that point of view? And, you know, where did you, when did you start feeling this way? And what happened in your background, or what information are, you know, do you base your ideas on? So just to be really curious about it. And that tends to put people in have a very different demeanor when you're asking them about themselves and you're showing curiosity. And the other kind of state of mind that I would suggest that can be really helpful is humility. You know, so
man,
I know,
I know.
That's a tough one for a lot of people, including me. Hey, I'm a professor, right? And you know, and the kind of humility that people that scholars identify as being the most important is actually intellectual humility. This idea that we don't have all the answers to all, we don't, none of it. In fact, you know, the highest level philosophers of society tell us the more that we know, the more we understand we don't know. Right. So really bringing that attitude towards some of these conversations can be an effective way to break down some of those barriers. And we find that people that have high levels, for instance, of intellectual humility tend to do better in, you know, talking across political difference than those who come in with low levels of intellectual humility.
Are those the state of mind? Is something can be trained, can be learned? Because I think a lot of people, when you hear a topic or a person, they get triggered. Like immediately they get to a stance, a certain state of mind, Susan, that it's hard to overcome, right? How is that something that's trainable, or you just have to continue to be observant of it?
I think it's both, right? I mean, so I think a lot about these conversations across difference as being like a bicep muscle. Right. You know, if you don't work at it, it atrophies and, you know, it's flab before you know it. Right. And that's the way our political discourse is today in society. In fact, the LaFalle School of Public Affairs, we're just about to launch the first undergraduate major in public policy across the universities of Wisconsin system. So any of the system schools, we're going to have the first major in public policy. And one of the classes in that major, one of the core classes, is called Advancing Public Policy in a Divided America. And part of that class is to learn kind of like what I'm calling the new civics skills about polarization and kind of talking cross difference. But part of that class is also to do, you know, debates, to put students in positions of argumentation where they're arguing against maybe a long held view, so that they can then recognize the importance of hearing from others, different points of view. It can sharpen their own argumentation and their point of view, but it can also help them better understand where other people are coming from.
Dr. Susan Webb Yackey, Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, for just a few more minutes. Susan, it sounded like a great experiment. Do you intend on continuing this or doing this again sometime in the future?
Yeah, we hope to. And in fact, I love that you used the word experiment. That's sort of how we treated it. You know, we're researchers at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And so we're trying to learn from these events as well. So people provided a lot of information and feedback on the events, what they liked, what they didn't like. And we're looking to see, did these events matter? Were they meaningful into people's attitudes? And there's assessments about things like political polarization and attitudes toward people and other political parties. So we're going to study it, and we're going to share in with white papers with other nonprofit organizations what we found. And that's going to be a big part of the next 6 months to a year.
Well, and Susan, as you mentioned, as part of the criteria for the folks that gathered, there, so it was not about convincing people to take your position on a particular topic. It was about engaging in civil dialogue and back and forth. But ultimately, at some point, you know, you got to try to convince some folks. And I wonder, is it part of the state of mind to just have to accept that some folks, based on perhaps a cultural or religious or deeply held belief, that they're just not going to be convinced?
I'm sure that's true, right? Yeah. So there are people, you know, there's lots of, you know, in convincing people to change their values in particular is very tricky business. Yeah. It doesn't happen overnight, and it's certainly not going to happen in a one-time dinner and conversation event. We would never expect that to happen. We wouldn't want that to happen. But I think what we can do, if we're interested in changing people's, you know, at long-term attitudes and assessments and values, is to start the conversation. Yeah. You know, you're never going to get there until you understand the why behind people, why they have particular long-held beliefs or values.
All right. So my takeaway for Dominic, don't drive angry and get some humility.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Susan Webb, Yackey Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It was a joy to meet you. Certainly appreciate it. Please come back again sometime. We want to continue these conversations. And if and when you decide to do others, please let me know. We'll be all about it.
Thank you for having me. I was delighted to be here.
Thank you. Folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. Come back with us, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I want to thank our most recent guest, Dr. Susan Webber, Yackey Professor, Director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Gives me hope. Gives me hope that people can still be Wisconsin nice and have nice conversations. We can still do that. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a little harder if you're trying to convince someone that they're wrong. Oh, wait. Don't drive angry and be humble. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Don't.
That's
not my normal state.
I know.
I endeavor to be that. I know that's what I should do.
Okay, so you recognize it and you move towards it. Baby steps.
Yes. The first thing you have to recognize is that it's there. I'm not going to call it a problem. Serve me well.
Uh-huh.
But depends on what you're trying to do. And if you're trying to have meaningful conversations, I think she's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You know, you really have to be curious. And I always say it. What do I always say all the time? Curious. You got to be curious. You have to have general curiosity. And I always say it as well. So we're on the same page. The more I learn, the older I get, the less I know. It's my God. It's
That's not usually how you phrase it, but yeah.
But something like that. Something like that.
What I loved about these meetups that they had was that they had these guidelines, these five rules that you're going to follow, and that they had the facilitators there.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that's a really powerful combination to have these expectations and say, this is the space that we're building. There are reasons why these are the guidelines that we're going to have, and we're going to have enforcement of it.
Right.
I think that provides a really powerful structure in which to have these conversations in a safer place.
Yes. Knowing that you're going to be there going in. And I think, but again, if you responded, you know, they sent out 3,000 forms, you know, ended up with, you know, less, just over 10% of folks responding. I mean, these are folks that are already inclined to be engaged and to engage and be engaged.
Who are looking for this conversation. Yes. So I guess my hope is that this can be sort of a seed that this can then ripple out, that these 300 or so people went to these meetups, they had these conversations, they started to learn and practice these skills. So now they can go out to their friends and their families and they can be the facilitators themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a skill. And I think the structure provided by the programming specifically and the mediators from the school, probably, you know, that guidance helps. I'm not convinced that the folks really know necessarily how to interact. If your natural defense or natural reaction is to get defensive upon whatever, criticizing or, you know, disbelief of your positions, whatever the case may be, and that's on all sides. You got to let that go. And if you're going to have a conversation, the point of it is for conversation. I do totally appreciate that. I think we as a society perhaps could use some lessons on that.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean?
And I'm not sure I'm the one to give them, Jess, but I recognize that that might be the case. General curiosity, certainly. But there's a lot of folks that don't engage, that would not engage. I think this is a bunch of, you know, hippie school.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, there's always going to be people who write off the attempts to come together.
But it seems like that seems to be growing. There seems to be, in my humble opinion, you can tell me if I'm wrong, 855-752-4842, an embrace of wanton ignorance of, I don't know, and I don't care.
Just look at the politics that are prevailing right now. It's the politics of I'm right, so shut up. It's the politics of multiple things can't be true at once. Right. It's going to the extremes rather than meeting in the middle. So I do think there's this desperate need to learn how to have these conversations.
Do we separate out our quote-unquote political class and those that make money off of this versus just, you know, everyday people walking down the street and living their lives in Milwaukee and Green Bay and Madison and Eau Claire and Upper Wisconsin? And, you know, I mean, when there's always a hook for the politics, or if you're selling something, you know, there's always, I want your vote, or I want you to buy my product, and you know,
or both.
Or both. Let me tell you about my new book.
Oh, goody.
It's about King Trump. And I want to be head of the FBI. So I want you. So Trump wants the vote. He wants you to buy the product. Uh-huh. The effort, the reason for though, I think it's different. If we're talking about just dialogue and understanding and camaraderie and community for the sake of dialogue, camaraderie, and community, I think that's an entirely different situation versus someone trying to sell you something or pull you into a different direction. And I think what was also very successful in this case is we're not convincing anybody. You're not here to convince someone. I also ponder, if it was... she said one of the topics they talked about were school vouchers.
Right.
That can be a very passionate conversation, certainly. But I don't put it up there with abortion.
Right. And I think that there's a reason why you start with schools, because it's something that almost everyone has a direct connection to. And it's not necessarily the topic that's going to get you turned to that 11 dial. It's something that maybe gets you cranked up to like a 5 or 6.
Well, they did overturn Act 10. I think some Republicans are cranked up pretty high right now. So maybe that was purposeful. We don't know. I mean, I guess we didn't get into some of the other topics. But as mentioned, though, you start out with a basis and then let the table go where they want to go. And to me, it seems like the heavier topics would be the ones that, you know, they kind of slide to. Mm-hmm. Those are ones that take up the grab.
Tend to be the ones that people are... At least many people, if they're looking for that true connection, they're going to be a little bit more hesitant to get to, because people are generally aware of the things that crank those dials up.
Yeah, yeah.
So there can be a tendency to be a little shy, a little hesitant on it. So you start with that 6 degree. And then you move up to the 7 or 8. You move up to the things that are a little closer to the heart, a little closer to the soul. And hopefully at that point, you've built up your skills a little bit. You have the baseline. You've got the basic skills. And then you can get into testing them.
I want to know when we can instill the drinking games.
That's in the after
you reach a certain level of civility and joy and camaraderie and community, table number three, you now get some scotch.
Then you can get into the real issues.
Right. Uh-huh. Then we'll talk about the real deal. Let me tell you what I really think. 855-752-4842. You know, the louder I get, the more right I am. Is that how it works?
No.
That's not how it works?
No.
Really?
Really.
If I get angry, my face gets red, that doesn't make me any more right.
It really doesn't. I know that that's very challenging for you to hear, and I'm going to ask you to have some intellectual humility on this.
I don't have any humility. I'm working on it.
I am.
Yeah. Come on. I know. And I certainly appreciate it. I think it's a great conversation. I think we should all endeavor to make those efforts. And you know, not every... Sometimes I do want to convince you folks, you know, so I do.
Absolutely.
That's okay. And sometimes I'm always open for consideration of other ideas, other angles, as mentioned. We don't know it all. I'm trying mm-hmm. to figure it all out, just like the rest of you. Now, we all have different experiences, right? We have different baggage, bring different things to the table. But we are certainly common in our humanity, especially in Wisconsin. We are Wisconsinites, and I hope
Absolutely.
We can remain that way. 855-752-4842. All right, some of the other national headlines. Got to get to this. Folks reporting over at The Hill as we talk about Hunter Biden's pardon. Oh, do we have to? I thought we kind of blew that one up yesterday. But, as The Hill reports, Trump's hush money dismissal motion invokes Hunter Biden pardon.
Of course
it does. Trump's attorneys laid out their arguments for why his criminal conviction in New York should be dismissed entirely in a new filing in which they cited Hunter Biden's pardon earlier this week. Since he won the election, Trump has pushed for tossing the jury's 34-count guilty verdict that stems from a 2016 hush money payment, drawing opposition from the Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, who has instead floated merely freezing the case during Trump's impending presidential term. 34-count guilty verdict. That was for fraud.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
34 counts of fraud. Say it again, fraud.
34
That's fraud
counts.
Of fraud. And he also had fraud with his Trump University. Didn't he pay?
Quite a lot.
He paid like a $20 million settlement.
Uh-huh.
He didn't.
The state of Florida didn't get cut in on that, though.
Well, you know, but Bondi's going to be the AG, and she got money from Trump. But the Trump charity gave her money, which you're not supposed to do.
You're not supposed to.
10%
she was running
fine.
For.
He got Trump's charity fraudulently gave Bondi money.
Mm-hmm.
Now she can cash the check, but Trump had to pay a 10%. Fine for that.
Ooh.
Only 15 or 25 grand that he gave her. But the fraud was certainly in the Trump University as well. But to Dan's point in Green Bay, I don't want to say he was guilty, but he did pay $20 million before he became president for Trump University. And I think it was him and his kids were no longer able
allowed
to
run a charity.
Be on the board of a charity in the state of New York for like 3 or 5 years. They got grounded. They got grounded for fraud. Anyway, to the point, the jury's 34-count guilty fraud verdict stems from the hush money payment. Again, the hush money payment was for what? He slept with a porn star, and he didn't want that news to get out on the heels of the Access Hollywood tape right before the election. So this is really less about hush money than it is about election interference, because, of course, that's what Donald Trump does. You just don't want to hear that, do you? But that's why he paid the hush money. Because he didn't want you to hear about it.
He wasn't worried about his wife finding out.
No, dude. But now the funny thing is, what a waste of money. Nobody cares.
It turns out he could have just been loud and proud about it.
Right, man. Could have saved yourself 160 Gs, man. Nobody cares. People thought they cared. They used to care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who was it? Dude, Hart, I forget the politician back in the day, had a lady on his lap, and he was out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was it. Mm-hmm. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
Your political career is gone.
Now it's a requirement?
Damn near. If you don't have a lap dance picture, then you're not trying hard
enough. If you didn't hop on stage with the strippers.
Come on. All right, hang on. One at a time. Bouncing around. We'll get to Hegseth in a minute. But again, Donald Trump's attorney's trying to get the conviction, the criminal conviction for fraud, for paying a porn star for sex in the midst of an election. But Hill doesn't say it like that, but that's what it was. The new brief expands upon Trump's past assertion that dismissal is required since he's president-elect, with his attorneys additionally citing President Biden's pardon of his son Hunter in the second paragraph of the court filing. I mean, way to put it right on top.
Well, yeah. I mean, no need to dance around it.
As President Biden put it yesterday, enough is enough, wrote Trump attorney Todd Blanche and Emil Bove, whom Trump also tapped for number two and number three positions in his Justice Department.
Yeah, just get your personal lawyers.
you know, James Santel always says that, you know, the Justice Department is not the president's personal attorney, right?
It certainly should not be.
Well, I mean, literally, dude, he's got number two and three, and he gave Bondi money out of his charity. I mean, come on. Of course, he's literally stocking the Justice Department with his personal attorneys.
Yes, he is.
Enough is enough. Which, of course, is what Biden said yesterday regarding his son. So there you go. Here we go. We'll do a little more detail here. Okay. I'll throw it out there. This spring, the jury convicted Trump on 34 felonies for falsifying.
I remember that day.
Feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? For falsifying New York business records to cover up a hush money payment as part of an intent to unlawfully influence the 2016 election. Trump's then fixer had paid the adult film star Stormy Daniels $130,000 to stay quiet during the campaign about an alleged affair with Trump. An affair he denies. He denies. All right, so they do get into a little bit of the detail to remind all you Trumpsters out there, what a swell guy you got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. He paid someone to not have sex and then ended up having to not have to pay it anyway because nobody gives a damn? I mean, man, talk about is that good or bad? Is that good decision-making by Donald Trump or bad decision-making by Donald Trump? I'd love to hear a Trumpster tell me if that's a great idea or a bad idea. He never should have paid the porn star. Or he should have paid the porn star. Anyway, so they're quoting the Hunter Biden, enough is enough. Pete Hegseth, this guy, man, he just keeps going. He's like the Energizer Bunny. And they're making all sorts of excuses for him. All the, you know, are these guys, they serve the country, and they're sometimes some of them are party guys, you know, and what are you going to do? He's just sowing some wild oats. We'll talk about that guy as well. Plus your calls, 855-752-4842. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you have something to say, hit us up on the lines right now. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Before we get to the Pig Hegseth article, it was from yesterday, but something struck me with it. Other breaking news, Trump's DEA nominee withdraws from consideration just days after being picked.
Was it within a Gates?
Let's see. He said on Tuesday. Okay, let's get through it. His choice to leave the DEA announced on Tuesday he's withdrawing just 3 days.
Oh.
3 days after Trump made his nomination known. Oh, my God.
A new unit of time.
We've beaten the Gates. It's now called a Cronister.
Oh, that's not quite as.
It's a Cronister.
A Cronister.
Yes, yes. Hmm. It's a Cronister. Florida Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister said in a post on Tuesday that he would instead tend to his current duties as overseeing an area of the Sunshine State that includes Tampa Bay.
So another Florida man pulls out.
Over the past several days, as the gravity of this very important responsibility set in, I've concluded that I must respectfully withdraw from consideration. There is more work to be done for the citizens of Hillsborough County and a lot of initiatives I'm committed to fulfilling. Cronister, now a measure of time of 3 days, continued, I sincerely appreciate the nomination, outpouring of support by the American people. I barely knew you, Chad. And look forward to continuing my service as sheriff of Hillsborough County. Way to go, Chad.
All right.
Trump announced him to lead the DEA on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, Trump wrote, I am pleased to nominate Sheriff Chad Cronister, 3 days, for administrator of the Drug Enforcement Agency. For 32 years, Sheriff Chad Cronister has served the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, received countless commendations and awards for keeping his community safe. Now, his background is mostly in law enforcement, graduated from the FBI National Academy's 260th session, co-chair of the Regional Domestic Security Task Force for Region 4 Tampa Bay, and had a tenure as a council member at the Florida Attorney General's Statewide Council on Human Trafficking. His withdrawal marks the second Trump nominee to do so, formerly known as Gates, 8 days Gates. As they mentioned, his candidacy withdrew his candidacy after 8 days. Oh, man. So there you go.
All right. Another one bites the dust.
The Florida Republican's quick withdrawal suggests he had realized he was unlikely to win the votes necessary to be confirmed in the Senate.
That's strange because his resume, he almost sounded qualified.
Well, I mean, it's FBI. I mean, yeah. Again, it's a big organization. You know, I mean, it's one thing to do the job. Mm-hmm. Beyond the job is something to be at the top, you know, with, you know, thousands and thousands of people.
See, this was what was lacking from the resume. Was there were no allegations of completely inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so he just
Chad, you gotta try it. Well, I would throw this out there. There is one former sheriff that I think, you know, maybe could be the head of the DEA.
Yeah, who's that?
Former Milwaukee County Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. You know, it's pitchforks and torches time in America.
Yeah.
That guy. Remember him?
I do.
He was considered for something in the previous Trump administration. Yeah, all hat, no cattle. and he got, I mean, he was so bad, he didn't get in the last one. But maybe he's around, but man.
Maybe, you know.
David A. Clark Jr., there's an opening at the DEA because Chad declined. And finally, if I may just indulge me for a moment, if I can find it.
You can have three.
I can have three?
Three moments.
Peg Seth.
Mm-hmm. This guy.
This guy. An article written in the Raw story talks about his, I don't have it, drunken activities at the strip club. What are you talking about? Here we go. Bombshell whistleblower report flags Trump DOD pick for drunken strip club antics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now say to the people what you said to me when you read that.
What did I say?
Is there any other kind?
I mean, come on. Drunken strip club antics, yeah.
Yeah.
And? How many sober strip club antics are there? I mean, come on. Have you been to a strip club? I mean, it's all about antics. Now, a little bit of the reporting. Again, we talked about this was yesterday. New Yorker's Jane Mayer, repeatedly intoxicated on the job. Now, this guy, this guy goes. And I mean, there was actually a little more in here. I didn't get all of it. The detailed 7-page report states that at one point, Hegseth had to be restrained while drunk from joining the dancers on stage in Louisiana, where he brought his team. This is what I'm saying. Team building. This is amazing.
Team building.
The report asserts that under Hegseth's leadership, the organization became a hostile workplace that ignored serious accusations of impropriety, including an allegation made by a female employee that another employee on Hegseth's staff had attempted to sexually assault her at the Louisiana strip club.
So that's why you don't have the team building at the strip club. I don't know if it's better if you bring the strip club into the building.
Yeah,
though.
See, I don't. What is the proper way to engage with strippers while at work? I mean, or at least in a work-ish setting. I mean, at least if I'm going to write it off. You know what I mean? Team building, guy.
Team building.
I wonder if he gets it. Does he get a corporate credit card at the Pentagon?
I mean, yeah.
He's going to be at Silk tomorrow. I just know it. Hey, folks, thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. I want to thank Overtime with Maggie Dawn. Make sure you listen to Maggie Dawn every Monday through Friday on the Civic Media Radio Network. She airs at 2 p.m. right before this fine program. And also, our new friend, Dr. Susan Webb Yackey, professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs. Folks, don't drive angry. And grab a little humility. I mean, did it ever hurt you to be a little more humble, people? Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.